second show.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, good evening, good evening, everyone. Welcome to Straight Talk Radio. I'm your co-host, Blair Nash, coming to you live and direct. Hope everyone had a great weekend, and everyone is kind of getting ready for the start to the new week. As always, I have my guy here who's running Sidekick with me, Ted Santos. Say hello, Ted.
Hey, good evening, everyone, and thanks for joining us. And we're going to have a slightly different, I'll say, groove on our show tonight. And I'm gonna, my voice, as you can hear, is a lot better. I'm probably 95%. So
you
I'm looking forward to this.
I was like, your voice sounds great, man.
I almost sound normal.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know about that, but you know, I feel what you're saying. So, yeah.
I feel a little tinge a little bit when I speak, but it's nothing like it was 2 weeks ago when I was, I felt like I was talking through a straw or something.
Go. Almost a bit of the doctor. Make sure you go to the doctor. Make sure you ain't got no Ebola spreading around enough. 2 weeks is a long time for just a common cold, my brother. That's a lot.
It wasn't a cold at all. I don't get sick. Come on, I'm Ted Santos. Come on, man.
I heard that. I hear you. Well, again, thank you everyone for listening in. And this is the Straight Talk Radio Show. Again, it's Blair Nash and Ted Santos. I wanted to kind of do a little bit of a different spin this week because one of the things we talk about a lot in relationships are finances. As anyone out there knows, and if you follow statistics, you know it's the number one factor in divorce. It's one of the number one issues when in any relationship. So obviously it's something that's paramount that we got to talk about and kind of, you know, talk about very directly. You know, we've had, you know, I mean, with me coaching, I know I talk to people and they say that, you know, he misled me with his finances. He's not a saver. He's a spender, or the opposite. You know, I hear from sometimes men, well, we're like, she's just running through my cash. Whether he has a lot of cash, whether he has a little bit of cash, she's just running through my cash. She won't listen to me, and, you know, her finances are jacked up. So when I went to Ted a few weeks ago and everything, and I said to him that I wanted to do a show like this, I really wanted it to be kind of a focus about how can we get finances back together? What can we do to sort of, you know, get everyone, you know, kind of centered and kind of get some people to answer, you know, kind of understand and answer, you know, kind of answer some questions that they might have had. So without further ado, let me just tell you a little bit about the guest that we have on this evening. He's a he's actually a good buddy of mine. It is Perry Jeffries. And I actually reached out to Perry because I know that he not only, you know, he deals with larger portfolio clients, but he has some, you know, people who are just kind of starting out with, you know, doing what they do and everything. So Perry, just, you know, to kind of give you a little bit of background on what he does, he's affectionately known as the ECFO. He can explain it to you here in just a moment. He is a business coach and financial advisor. In addition, he is president of Diamond Equity Advisors, which is a financial planning firm located here in Columbus, Ohio. Has clients across the country, and also founder of the 60-Day Small Business Financial Incubator System. Perry is currently being featured on Fox 28 in the segment Financially Fit Fridays with Perry. He has also been featured on ABC. He has spoken to several colleges, including being a workshop presenter and keynote speaker at the Ohio State University, as well as most recently at Tuskegee University. Most recently, Perry has been retained by the Ohio Society of CPAs as one of the featured speakers on the topic of personal finance and business cash management. Perry currently holds a Series 7 license, Series 66 license, a life, health, and annuities license, the CRPC, which is a Chartered Retirement Planning Counselor, and the CPFA, which for any of us that don't know, which I did as well, is a Certified Plan Fiduciary Advisor. Lastly, Perry is a certified John Maxwell speaker and coach, and also ambassador to Damon John's FUBU Shark Tank and his Rise and Grind book release. So Without further ado, I want to welcome Perry to the show. Perry, say hello to everyone this evening.
Hello. Can you hear me okay, Blair and Ted?
Hear you loud and clear. You sound wonderful.
Perfect. Thanks again
for being on the show. I know Ted, you know, has a background as far as well in investments and a lot of dealings with, you know, cash deposits and things as well. So he was really excited about having you on the show too. So if you want, Perry, just before we get started, just tell us a little bit about kind of what you do and how you kind of, you know, came to be with all the different accolades that you have, please.
Yeah. I'll try to keep it pretty brief here. So I have to first say that I'm just a kid from Akron. So I'm originally from Akron, Ohio, and moved down to Columbus here back in 2000. So graduated from Tennessee State University with a degree in math and a minor in biology. And I moved down to Columbus, man, looking for opportunity after I finished teaching and coaching in Akron. So moved down here, got into the health and fitness industry. So some of your viewers may remember me back in the day being a personal trainer over at Lifetime Fitness. And then in 2003, decided to take my talents into the financial services, if you will. So I've been involved in real estate. At one point in time, I had a $4 million real estate portfolio, about 25-some-odd units. I started that back in 2001 and really got into the financial services because I was excited about it. So when I moved to Columbus and had the opportunity to actually be around some very wealthy individuals, I was exposed to what true wealth was. And, you know, we didn't have these conversations growing up in Akron and the environment that I was in. So, you know, when I moved to Columbus and got exposed to some of these folks who were making not just making a ton of money, but actually had a ton of money, I wanted to learn. So as I dove into books and start sitting down and working with individuals and just learning more about creating wealth, I decided in 2003 that that's what I was passionate about. So I've always been passionate about teaching and coaching. But after I learned some of these skill sets, I wanted to share it with everybody that I knew. And the best way I knew about doing that was going out and becoming a financial advisor where I had a platform where I could share the information that I had learned. So that's how I got into the financial service business.
Okay. Good stuff.
Yeah.
Ted, what are your I know you want to kind of put a little bit of your piece on it and everything. What are your thoughts?
Well, I'd like you to move at your pace, and you know, our listeners are pretty diverse. You know, we may have some people who are not the best at managing money, and we have some people who have thriving businesses. So, you know, some of these people may have invested in equities. I heard you were a math major. Did you ever become a quant guy?
No, not at all. So when I picked up a degree, it was off the strength of this. So when I started college, I started off at Howard University in D.C., went there to play basketball and entered as a computer science engineer. Learned pretty quickly there, Ted, that like, I can't sit in front of a computer all day. So I transferred over to the School of Business and actually was going to pursue a career in actuarial science, which is math-based, obviously, in the business arena. But then when the opportunity to play basketball at Howard University fell through, the coach who recruited me left, transferred there, went to a junior college in New York, played basketball up there, and then got a full ride down to Tennessee State. So when I transferred to TSU, I already pretty much had a math degree, and at that point in time, I was thinking about going into med school. So that's where the math with the biology minor came into place. So attending college, I had no idea I was going into the financial service piece at all.
Right. Yeah, they would have loved you in the hedge fund world with that kind of background.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Definitely. Yeah.
Hey, one quick second. There's some noise in the background, so even if you're picking up paper, the microphones are so sensitive, they pick up everything. So on mute, or if you're talking, just don't move around or anything, all right? And that's for all the callers, anyone who's calling in. It becomes a little bit of a distraction when you hear all that background noise. It's hard to hear.
Right.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Keep going.
Well, let me just kind of jump into it and everything, because I know the caller is going to be on the line here shortly. So let me just kind of kick to my first question I had for Perry, which is that we talk a lot about you know, kind of, we talk a lot about how things are in the Black community as far as our finances and everything. If you can, give our listeners an idea. We say, you know, things are bad in the Black community. One of the things we always talk about, and I'll say like this, and I'll segue and say, we like to talk a lot about, you know, things that politicians can do. You know, what can Kamala Harris do? What did Barack Obama not do? What can Trump do? What can, you know, Cory Booker do? And I've always been of the volition that they're very kind of, you know, they're very kind of glued to what they can do. They only really can do a minimal amount of things. A lot of it has to come from us. That said, if you can, give our listeners an idea of just how bad things Black folks right now. Are the numbers overblown? Is it much ado about nothing? Where are we right now as a people, Perry?
Well, I'll answer this question, and also, too, I'll give a little backstory as well as I answer it. So are the numbers overblown? No, things are really, really bad, and they're actually getting much worse. And I believe one of the issues that we're facing in the Black community is the lens that we're looking at this thing. So a lot of times we're looking at how much money we make versus how much money we save and how much money we invest. Those are two different conversations. I just recently did a segment talking about the difference between revenues and profit. So it's not necessarily about how much money we make, because if we look at how much money we make, we've been closing the income gap for years. And just here recently, only in 2017, did we get a little stagnant with regards to income. But if we're talking about net worth, we're looking at all things included. So we're looking at real estate, we're looking at cash, we're looking at investments and things of that nature. So I pulled up a stat here on Forbes magazine. Anybody can go check it out. Forbes in 2018 said that for every $100 in white family wealth, Black families hold just $5.04. So for every $100 in white families, we match them at $5.04. So to make that number even bigger, if a white family has $100,000, we have $10,000 in net worth. So if we're using net worth to be able to calculate that, we are far behind. And also in the same article, it said that we've been trending downwards at a rapid rate. So if this trend continues, they're saying that the median Black wealth would hit zero by 2053. So the numbers aren't overblown. It's not to do about nothing. We are in a really, really bad place, and we're trending to a worse place. So, no, I love the fact that we're having this conversation, because to your point earlier, you know, relationships, a lot of relationships are based upon, you know, not based upon, but, you know, the financial substance of the relationship have a lot to do with whether or not the relationship lasts. So as a community, we need to be having this conversation, and actually we probably need to be having this conversation daily.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Another thing I want to ask you about and everything, and this is kind of piggybacking on that, is we hear a lot of talk about kind of this thing, and I'm very familiar with it. I'm not acting like I don't know about it, but this thing called Black Wall Street. We always kind of resort back to, well, you know, Black Wall Street back in the 20s, that was when we were really doing things. We were on point back then. And yeah, we were on point. But, you know, Black people were making strides. We were prosperous. We ran 100% of our businesses, you know, gas stations, banks, insurance companies, movie theaters, private airplanes. Mm-hmm. We talk a lot about the how can we get back to that. But, you know, I mean, I'm in a few chat rooms, and I've been in some other discussions with people. You know, they say, this is what we need. We need a nation build. We need to pull together. But then all of a sudden, that conversation just stops and everything. So we talk a lot about it, but there's, you know, as far as making it a reality and executing it, we seem to fall short. My question to you is, and it's kind of a several-part question, what do you think contributes to this mindset where we just talk about it but nothing gets done? The other part of the question I want to have is, are we that damaged as a Black community and distrusting of others where we absolutely refuse to just do anything with each other on a grand scale? What do you think is going on with that? And I know it's kind of outside the financial lines, but I want to just kind of get your thoughts on it. And yours too, Ted, when Perry gets done with his comment.
Sure. So this would be my take on it, right? So if we look at Black Wall Street, and I'm like you, I hear it come up all the time. I've researched it myself. So if we look at what happened in Tulsa, Oklahoma, understand that they created an ecosystem. So they actually had a firewall where they said, hey, we're all going to go ahead and park our tents here, our businesses in this area, within this ecosystem, and we're going to build with each other. So we hear about the Black Wall Street, but also, too, on a side note, what was going on outside of Black Wall Street, because Black Wall Street is very unique in a sense in the way it was put together. So you had all of these businesses in this one area, and those businesses thrived off each other. Why? Because they limited their choices. Their choice for the doctor was the guy down the street, which happened to be another Black. Their choice for, you know, a grocery store was the Black down the street. So they limited where they could spend their dollars. And that's one of the things I don't think we discuss enough with respect to the Black Wall Street and how that can possibly be recreated. Because, again, they created that firewall where they had to spend with each other. So kind of moving into your other question here, we don't create an ecosystem as a people. And what I mean by that is this. Let's even look outside of the Black Wall Street. Are we even spending dollars with our friends and family? So that's the ecosystem right there. If we're not spending dollars with our friends and family, how are we going to create a Black Wall Street? Is that are we going to take a piece of land and say, hey, all of us are going to live here and limit our choices where we spend? That's not even realistic in the global world that we live in. So the question I think it comes down to is we have choices of where we can spend our money. Where are you spending your money? Don't talk to me about any Black Wall Street if you're not supporting your uncle, your cousin, your mom and them's business, your homeboy you went to school with. We have to start spending money there, first and foremost.
Right.
And then and I'll use this example. I don't know how many of our viewers are in Columbus, but in the Columbus area, we know we have pockets of people. If I say Bexley, the first thing that you're going to think about, like, hey, that's where the Jewish majority of the Jewish population is. If I say
right.
Northern Lights or Morse Road, that's the majority of the Somalian population.
Somalia.
And guess what?
Yeah.
They recycle their dollars 5, 6, 7 to 10 times inside their community. Now, they will spend outside of their community because I actually have Jewish clients, right? And I've worked with Somalian clients. But they're going to first look and see if they can spend it with their uncles and their cousins and them before they start dishing those dollars someplace else. So that's kind of my two cents on that. And even digging a little deeper into, you kind of talk about with the mindset and the distrusting piece. I've sat in rooms of individuals wanting to network and build and whatnot. Until we get conscious, have that conscious thinking, I believe, that you care about somebody else's success as much as you care about your own, then we're just talking. And I think that's one of the issues you run into, Blair, is when you talk about boots hitting the ground. Everybody wants to, let's do this, let's do that. But do you genuinely care about me as a man, a Black man, a person? Do you genuinely care whether or not I can put food on the table and take care of my wife and kids? Until we get to that intimacy of caring about each other, then we're just talking with this Black Wall Street piece. And then we have to start thinking, too, that was an isolated scenario where you had everybody in one area. This world is so global right now. So now we need to start. I think we need to be thinking globally, but more importantly, take care of your family and support your family first.
Absolutely, absolutely. What are your thoughts on that, Ted?
Well, I probably have a very different perspective than most people. So, Blair, I wrote an article. I think it was last year. And so if you just look at, I wrote an article about racism. And I'm going to post a video up on my page probably later today or tomorrow. The question really is race in the United States, is racism a fact or is it an emotion? Because you can get caught up in a hype and as long as you think life is helpless and there's no opportunity, you won't prepare yourself for the things that you claim you want. So if you thought the Olympics was rigged, you would never train to be an Olympic athlete, even though you had everything it took to win a gold medal. You won't bother.
So that's powerful.
And then you talk about an ecosystem. you talk about an ecosystem, you just look at the Latino community in the United States. I've said this to you, Blair, that probably by 2050, Latinos are going to be the largest population in the U.S. And by then, mm-hmm. we probably will have elected a Spanish-speaking president, and things are going to be very different in this country. Latinos have family. They have divorces. They have single mothers, but not at the rate as of some other community. The Asian community very much work together. We go to Chinatown.
Mm-hmm.
So that's that's happening today in 2019. You have Hispanic communities spread all over the place, and they go to the restaurants, they go to the hardware stores, they go to whatever they need. Some guy posted a video, and he said there was this. He was a Black American. He said it was a house, abandoned house next to his house, and he saw, you know, a few people come by, look at it, and then it appeared someone bought it. It was a Latino. I think they were Mexican, and they came in, and then an hour or so later, a truck with all these guys and equipment showed up, went into the house, and in the morning, this abandoned house was ready to be lived in. And it was all his friends and cousins. And he said, the Black guy said, "Hey, man, it looks like you're already remodeled the house completely." He said, "Yeah." He said, "Well, who are these guys? Did you pay them?" He said, "No." He said, "These are just my friends. I gave them pizza and beer, and, you know, we just look out for each other." Sort of what you were saying about caring.
Yes.
And they got the job done. So you can tell me all this stuff that doesn't exist, except if you're sitting around playing victim and saying, "They won't let me, they won't let me," then you won't even train to get there.
Right. I love that. I love that.
You shot yourself in the foot. You shot yourself in the foot before you started and said, "See, I can't win." Well, you shot yourself in the foot.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I'm sorry, go ahead, Perry.
Oh, no, I was going to say, Ted, I want to kind of piggyback off of that, too. And I know we're going to get through some other questions and all of that, but to your point, creating wealth is such a mindset. And I love that analogy that you used, that if you feel that the Olympics are already rigged, why even train for it, and not really understanding that you already have all the God-given gifts to be successful and go get that gold medal, but you don't even train for it because you think it's already rigged. And again, that comes down to the mindset and the collective mindset, I think, of the community, one of the reasons that we tend to struggle in this particular space. So I want to share jump on something that Blair said earlier. So contrary to popular belief, I don't have a lot of wealthy clients. Most people think when you have a financial advisor, like, "Oh, she only talks to wealthy individuals," and that's, I think, one of the things that's shooting us in the foot as well, is because we think, "Oh, advisors only want to talk to wealthy individuals." My platform is one of financial planning, which and I can dig in, we'll kind of dive into kind of what that means here someplace down the road in the conversation here. But financial planning, I believe, is for everyone, because everyone needs to have a blueprint when it comes to creating their wealth. The same way you need a blueprint for your home, you need a blueprint for your finances. So, again, it's getting our head wrapped around that, "Oh, that's for them, not for me." No. You can create wealth. And if we have all the tools and the information out here to create wealth. Sure, we can jump on Google and find out a good mutual fund. We can jump on YouTube and learn how to do X, Y, and Z. It comes down to our mindset and our execution, which is why I added a coaching platform in my business, because I realized the issue wasn't lack of information. We can get information. We can all pick up our phone and Google a ton of stuff. But how do we execute is where the gap is, at least my opinion. But I just wanted to jump piggyback on what you were saying, Ted, because I loved everything.
Right, hold it, and let's hold that thought right there. So there's lots of information. That's analogous to a diet. There's so much information on how to diet. There's so many people who have all the information on how to diet, yet they cannot lose weight.
at all. Mm-hmm. They gain weight.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not information. When you get that, it's not the information that's going to have you lose weight or have the body you want. It's a certain mindset. And part of it is if, for example, if you're overweight and you look in the mirror, even if you lose the weight, you don't see yourself as that healthy person with a physically fit body. So you lose the weight and eventually gain it back because that's where your mindset is. And I mean it's for a lot of things. Hell, I advise CEOs of middle market companies, and those companies, you watch these companies grow, and the CEO doesn't have the mindset and the skills and competency to manage a larger company, and it shrinks right back down to what he can handle.
Mm-hmm.
Right. People choke off possibility just by the way they think. So that the mindset, and look, and if you doubt me, look at the average person who wins a large lottery ticket. They win $10 million. They spend $10 million. Don't account for taxes, and they're in worse shape. Most people who win a lottery ticket are in worse shape. So it's not money that solves the problem.
I love this conversation. Spot on. I love it.
Yes, absolutely. Real quick, let me throw the number out there because we got a couple callers on hold, and I want to get the number out to everyone. The guest caller number is 323-642-1387. Again, 323-642-1387. It is an excellent conversation, and I'll just kind of chime in on something that Ted said, and you said as well, Perry. I think that what happens when you talk about finances is a lot of folks are, you know, one of the things, you know, there's an old saying, you know, in the black community, you know, we want to, and I'm going to butcher it, I know, but it's something like we want to look rich, but in the end we're actually looking good losing, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I think what happens with a lot of us is we are afraid to admit because we kind of had this belief or this image that we put up that everything is fine. You know, we might have a nice car. You go to our homes, like, oh, wow, we got, you know, nice couch, nice TV. You know, I see they're in Vegas. Oh, okay, you know, so when you look at all the outside, you know, pieces of who they are and everything, it appears as though, you know, everything is on point. When the truth of the matter is that they don't really have anything outside of the of just what you see. They have the nice car.
Oh.
You know, they might have, you know, a couple hundred dollars in the bank, but when you look at it and you strip it down, they don't have much. And so it's nothing to be ashamed of, but I think what happens is when you're 25 or maybe even when you're 30, you can kind of say, well, I got plenty of time. That's no issue. But when you're 40,
mm-hmm.
50, 55, and then people kind of look at you and say, well, wait a minute. You, at this point, you should be, you know, kind of up and running. And I think the embarrassment sometimes from not having certain things and not having liquid assets and not having a pension and retirement and money saved and investing in stuff, I think the embarrassment a lot of times kind of makes people shut it back and not want to really, you know, not really want to talk about it. So let me try to get one of the calls and everything.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, did you have something you want to say?
Yeah, Blair. I want to piggyback. I'm going to take the baton and run with that for a couple minutes and kind of share my story. But if you need to do something on the administrative side, go ahead.
No.
So
absolutely, you are a guest. Go ahead.
So here's the deal, man. And since this is straight talk, let's just keep it totally 100. I've been broke, and I've been broke since I've been a financial advisor. So you know that embarrassment that people have, like, oh, I got to look like I'm making money. So those who know my story, and all of my clients know this, and those and I share this very openly with everyone. So when I moved from Akron, Ohio, I was making, I think, $40,000 a year as a school teacher and a basketball coach, and still, and when I graduated, I was staying home with my parents. So back in 1999, $40,000 without really no overhead, I was balling. Right, and I was feeling good about myself. And I moved down to Columbus as a personal trainer, transitioned down here, and like I said earlier on, got around some individuals who were doing some different things and whatnot, and got exposed to, you know, wealth and whatnot. So what ended up happening, I ended up getting into real estate, and I did have a $4 million real estate portfolio. And you notice I used did have a $4 million real estate portfolio. I blew that. When the market crashed in 2007 to 2009, I know we're probably going to talk about the recession a little bit, but I blew that. And so not only did I lose all of my net worth because I was being reckless, and not just being reckless, but being uninformed. So it's a difference in making money and a difference in keeping money. See, I didn't have the right structures and systems in place, or nor did I have the right network in place to show me how to keep this wealth that I had accumulated in such a short period of time. So when the market crashed, you know, the market was cut in half, almost 50, 60%. Well, if I'm a stockbroker, guess what happened to my money? Cut in half, 50, 60%. Okay, the real estate market crashed. I was in the middle of doing crazy rehabs, a ton of rehabs. We were doing condo conversions. You know, they had all those crazy loans out there. I was cashing out and all that. And because I didn't understand how to keep wealth, I knew how to make money, but keeping wealth is totally different. So I lost everything. So when I started one of my companies called Financially Fit, I didn't put that together because I was a marketing guru and I thought health and wealth sounded good together. No, I did that because I was in one of the worst ways of my life. Had lost everything, had just had twin daughters. Now I'm looking at multiple miles to feed. And I put together a system to say, you know what? I can't control the real estate market. I can't control the stock market. I can't control healthcare. But what I can control is how I spend my money. So guess what? They came and picked up that white Jag that I had. You know what I'm saying? And I didn't sell that. I said, hey, y'all come get it. You know what I'm saying? That white Navigator I had, got rid of that, right? I started looking at my expenses and my health and saying, hey, I got to make some decisions here because it's not about me anymore. I got these mouths I need to feed. I got these little eyes looking at me, and I need to be there for them. So you know what? I'm going to stop going out as much and popping bottles. Let me go ahead and put this money away, and let me get a little healthier lifestyle so I can be here for my daughters. So this is what we need to get since we haven't straight talk tonight. Folks who think, oh, financial advisors, you guys are making a ton of money. No. Financial advisors just mean that they pass the test and they have the ability to sell you something. That don't mean they know how to create wealth. So when I reinvented myself and went and lost my last corporate job where I was making great money in 2014, when I was standing at the desk looking at my boss and said, hey, man, how am I supposed to take care of my family? And he looked back at me and said, Perry, I don't know. You're sharp, but I'm sure you're going to figure it out. That's when I knew I would never look at another man, woman, or company in the face to ask them how I'm going to take care of my family, because ultimately the only person's responsibility to take care of mine is me. And that's when I started picking up the coaching piece. That's when I hired coaches and went out and invested in hiring coaches and really getting around people who could really help me take my business to the next level. So I share that backstory. I know it's kind of off topic a little bit, but I think it's so important for our viewers to hear that because they think, oh, well, he got it going on and I'm embarrassed. Yo, I've been flat out broke. I've had lights turned off with a Jaguar parked in the driveway. So understand something. It's about growth. Get from regardless of where you are, there's opportunity for you to get in a better situation. But you have to be conscious and start making those moves toward that. It's kind of like going to a doctor. If you got a rash and you're embarrassed to go to the doctor and come to find out it was stage 4 cancer, I mean, it's too late at that time, right? So right. I know I went off on a tangent, but when you said so if you go straight talk, I said we'll keep it 100 tonight. So I have to just share that.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I'm going to go to a call and everything, and I'll just kind of, you know, give a little bit of my story as well. Similar to you, as many people know, I was a mortgage broker for a number of years. And what I did was, you know, I had all the trappings. I had, you know, beautiful home, two vehicles and whatever. And around 2008, when everything kind of hit, I was like, you know, but I had savings. I had, you know, decent savings, slightly under 30 grand as far as, I mean, just cash, which I said, that'll hold me over. That'll be fine. But one of the things that that no one ever talked to me about is what happens when that goes away? What happens when you run through? Because anybody that's been out of work will tell you, you can run through 20 grand easy. You can run through 30 grand easy. So what I had to do is, you know, because I said, well, I'm cool. My house note and everything was probably about close to 1800 at the time. And I was like, well, you know, I'll still be fine. I got 6-7 months easy of, you know, money to just kind of whatever. But what happens when that goes away? And so, like yourself, I had the thing where I was making, you know, six figures, you know, basically 4 years in a row I did that. And then the very next year when after 2008 hit, I probably made about $50,000. The very next year, I had literally started losing everything, lost my home, lost both my cars, was kind of in a situation where I was cool with the neighbor. So, I mean, you talk about lights being out and everything. I ran the little cord back through his yard and had my power, actually getting my power to win.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone loves their favorite author, but I got some, I tell you, you know, and this is a shameless plug, my memoir will be out in 2020 in the spring, but there will be some stories in there that will shock you about your boy. So I feel when I say that, when you say that, you know, you go from kind of a situation of doing very well to like, oh my God, what the hell is going on here? So I definitely feel you on that. Mm-hmm. And it's all you can really do, like you said, all you can control is what you can control. And it's a race that we as Black folks stay in because we're perpetually always trying to play catch up, trying to just stay above water. And the whole reason why I wanted to have this show this evening was to kind of bring light to the fact to a lot of people that you're not alone. You know, if you're sitting there like, man, I make 40, 50 grand a year, I ain't got nothing. I don't have no home. I don't have no assets. I don't have this. This is what this show is for you to hear some, you know, very straight talk, for, you know, no pun intended, but hear some straight talk about your situation and kind of understand where it's at. So, yeah, let me go to our first caller and everything because I want to get to our other questions and everything, but let me try to get my first person on here. So we have area code 605. Are you there? 605. Are you there? Okay, so we will go now to area code 614. That's my area code. 614, are you there? 614, you are live on the air. Okay, so there, I don't know if, hold on. Okay, I don't know if folks are just nervous
people,
or skittish
people
about
just want to listen. They're, so you know what? Maybe we should. I have a question. And so when we talk about money and finances, it really does affect money has no, there's no racism when it comes to money. Money will come to you and it will go walk away from you regardless of your skin color or your gender. And part of perhaps the problem in the U.S. is we have very much a consumer culture. We save a lot less than many other countries, especially when you look at Asian countries. So where does a person start? Let's say someone, whether you're just starting a business and, you know, you have limited capital or you just have a job, a 9-to-5, and you want to set up, you talk about systems. Like, what are the most elementary systems that you can put in place to get you into a practice of developing wealth one step at a time?
Uh-huh. Great question. So, and I'll do a shameless plug on this too and kind of talk about my two companies and what we do in that. But to answer your question directly, Ted, regardless if I'm presenting to a college, a room of retirees, a high school, you know, kids who are 12 or 13 years old, ultimately the first thing you should do across the board to start building wealth is get you a pen and paper, or if you're like me and your handwriting's horrible, get you an Excel spreadsheet and start to really know your numbers. And when I say know your numbers from a budget standpoint, I can't tell you the percentage of people who, when I ask them this simple question, hey, what is your monthly budget? How much revenue how much income do you need? So whether we're talking business or personal, because I actually do coaching and advising for businesses and individuals. How much revenue or how much income do you need to bring in per month to keep your house or your business afloat? 9 times out of 10, they can't answer that question, and we have to go to an Excel spreadsheet and have them list out everything they have. We can't talk about building wealth if we don't even have the foundation of wealth, which is going to come down to your cash flow and come down to your budget. So somebody can always tell me, oh, well, Perry, I make $100,000 a year. Well, that's dope. Okay, I make $10,000 a month. That's dope. But when we look at that budget, you're spending $9,999, so you got a dollar in cash flow. What are we going to do with that? So that's the thing that most people don't want to do is really be candid and transparent with themselves. The heck of being transparent with me, be transparent with yourself and sit down and write out every one of your expenses. And if going and buying, you know, the designer handbag and shoes and all that is part of your monthly expense, you need to write it down. What's going to happen with that process, Ted, is that we're going to be crystal clear. We're going to say, huh, we either have positive cash flow a month or negative cash flow a month. 9 out of 10 people, if you ask them just straight up, you know what I'm saying, without them pulling out a phone or, hey, how much money do you need to bring in per month just to keep your house afloat or to keep your business afloat, cannot answer that question. That's the first most elementary thing that you can do. Because after we identify the cash flow, figuring out how to build wealth. So whether we're saying, hey, okay, we got an extra $500 a month, let's put that towards some investments, or hey, let's go ahead and up how much money we're adding to our retirement plan, or hey, let's use this to hire a coach to start your business, or hey, regardless if we're talking to an individual or a business, it comes down to that simple exercise right there. What is your budget?
Real quick, let me throw the number in real quick again, 323-642-1387. I had one of my friends who actually was on the line, who was one of the people that was going to make a comment, but she got a little scared. So if you want to call back in, that's fine. If not, definitely understand. But again, the number is 323-642-1387. So my next question I want to get to, and then we'll get to the other callers. Perry, I just want to say I really appreciate all the information that you give me, because you're kind of making me look at some things as well and say, okay, I need to really just kind of get it together. And I mean, one thing that you mentioned as well about people not knowing their budget, for those of you who don't know, I'm a loan originator. I do loans for a company here in Columbus. And I speak to people all the time, and like you said, you go down I have a list of pretty much about 9 questions that I ask them, ranging from, you know, your interest rate, how much is, you know, what's your debt to income, what's your loan to value, et cetera, et cetera. And one of the questions that I ask them is, how much revolving debt do you have? And they're like, I don't even know. And I'm like, wait a minute, who does the bills? Who in your home? I do. How do you not know how much revolving debt? How do you not know how much revolving debt, you know, auto loans and credit cards? You should be able to file it off with no problem. And they don't know that. No, they don't know how much their balance is. They don't know how much the total household income is. And so, like you said, I mean, and this kind of goes outside of race. This is, you know, because I speak to people who are of all ethnicities. This is outside of just black people. But it just really kind of befuddles me how you can come to someone and say, you know, and they come to me and say, hey, I want to refi my home or borrow against my equity. And I ask you some generic, you know, germane questions about your finances, and you just shrug and like, I don't know. So there are a lot of people out there who are very naive to where their financial station is in life. So you are 100% right. So let me skip to this next question, and we're going to try to take another call. You mentioned at the very beginning of the podcast that, you know, we've been kind of trending downwards, that, you know, I mean, going all the way back to Black Wall Street and even, you know, the 50s and 60s, where things were kind of getting better. And it seems in a number of areas we are kind of going backwards. What was the year when we started to have data that shows that black folks' incomes and the monies that they were able to save, et cetera, were on the decline? Was it the 70s or the 80s? Did it start with the Great Recession? And the second question is, what was some of the fallout that you saw from the Great Recession?
Okay. So I would even, versus kind of looking at that data, because sometimes the data can be skewed, and I've even tried to look at that. It's like, okay, so when did we hit like a point where we started to catch up? or when did we start to fall back? And I pulled up some census data, I think it was 2017 here recently, and saying that, you know, around that time we have started to really close the income gap. Okay, so I want to make sure that the viewers understand we're talking about income gap. We're not talking about wealth gap, because the wealth gap is still crazy large. But the income gap,
right.
And then we started to kind of stagnate in 2017, which is interesting because, you know, the Great Recession was between 2007 to 2009. So I remember speaking to a wealthy client back then, and we were having this conversation. She said, Perry, this recession is hurting everybody. So I believe everybody was hurt. You know, if you were the, you know, the million-dollar client who had a huge stock portfolio that was cut in half, you was hurt just as bad as the, you know, the guy that had $10,000 who was cut in half, right? So we all felt in a great recession from that standpoint. But if we start talking about black folks, this is what I think we got to focus on a little bit here, is we mentioned earlier the consumerism, right? So we are making money. It's not a question whether I'm making money. I know several black folks who are doing, you know, well six figures, you know what I'm saying? Even upwards of seven figures, right? It's not about the money. It's about what we're doing with the money. So I'm going to take it back here. I know we've talked about the 60s and the 70s, but I'm even going to go back here, and I'm not a history major, but I've studied this a little bit as well, with respect to kind of just, you know, just slavery and getting back into that particular space. I was having a conversation with my frat brother today, and because we talk about this all the time, what is wrong with black folks and what we need to be doing to help and how can we help, and okay, and I shared with him this. I said, hey, man, you know, one of the reasons I went into entrepreneurship was the conversation I had with my current wife. And the day I lost my job, July 8th, 2014, you know, a couple of days later, we watched the movie Django. And I remember us laying there after the movie was over, and I looked over and I said, hey, I'm Django. And so I was kind of tossing and turning. She said, what's wrong? You need to talk. I said, yeah, I'm Django. So we both laughed, and kind of it's a backstory behind it, which I'll share with the viewers here in a little bit. But I said to her, I said, did you realize that when slaves were emancipated, that some of those slaves, if not a large majority of them, did not leave the plantation?
She was like, no, I
didn't know that. I said, yeah. I said, now, in theory, we were supposed to be, you know, a grant of 40 acres and a mule. Now, that didn't happen, but let's say that in theory, all of that was in place. I had to ask myself after I lost my job, would I continue to work on a plantation, and let's say it's 100 acres, and receive, you know, a quarter of 1 acre as my income, or would I take my 40 acres and a mule and go out there and keep 100% of my 40 acres? So I say that, and this is where I'm going to kind of segue into this conversation here. We have lost the identity and skill set behind entrepreneurship. And I'm going to kind of tie these two together here. Every household is a business. So you got a business that's brick and mortar, you working online, I don't care. If you don't have a business, every household is a business. So to your point, when those folks come in there and ask for that loan and they can't answer that cash flow question, those are business questions. Those are the same questions, you know, a lender would ask a business who's trying to get a $1 million loan. What's your cash flow? What's your revolving debt? How much income did you have? So I take it back here is that one of the issues I think we have is not about how we make money. We can go out and make money. Just as a people, we have hustle, tenacity, all kind of just talent, if you will. But the question is, do you really understand how business works? Because whether we're talking about personal income or business income, that's what we need to get our heads wrapped around, is how do we manage our households the way a solid 500 business manage their income? So that's my two cents on that.
Yeah, absolutely. Ted, you've been kind of quiet over there. What are your thoughts?
What he's saying about managing your finances and your household being a business. And so I don't remember what book I was reading, but there was a law firm that was making their revenues, Perry, you talked about this before. Their revenues were $450 million a year. They filed bankruptcy. Like, one day people came to work and there were padlocks on the door. because they were making their top line revenue was $450 million, but they were spending more than that and they went out of business. So, see, this is lawyers are smart, doctors are smart, but they're not always the best business people. They're good at their craft. They're technicians at whatever they do. So this law firm, they were not running the business well. They didn't realize that they were spending more than they were making, even though they could brag about $450 million coming in and billing clients. But somewhere they went off the rails and didn't realize it.
Right. And I would just add to that, Ted, people look at that and say, there's probably some stuff that was going on. Yeah, that's a very realistic thing that can happen. Look at all these, not slamming nobody, but look at all these NFL, NBA players who have this massive wealth, make hundreds of millions of dollars over their career. And, Perry, I'm sure you know this number. I don't know exactly. But I think, if I'm not mistaken, 5 years after retirement, 60% of NBA players are pretty much dead broke, as opposed to 75%. NFL players are broke 5 years after they retire. And I mean, that you have, I think what happens then, and I've been guilty of it, I've not had that kind of wealth. I've been guilty of having money and just spend it, and then all of a sudden you look up like, what happened to that 10 grand check I made? What happened to that, da, 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 da. And you're like, I had it, like you said, you're living this lifestyle, and the next thing you know, you look up and you're like, because it's all good when the money's coming in, but if you have a bad year or a bad couple of years, then all of a sudden, you're in the red, and you're like, how do we get here? It's unfortunate.
I'll share a stat. Just did a presentation on this here recently. 70 to 80% of small businesses fail, and 70 to 80% of households are paycheck to paycheck. It's not any irony in there that the reason that those two numbers are so similar to each other, because they suffer from the same issue. It's exactly
right.
So we looked at the 800,000 workers. Yep. We looked at the 800,000 government workers who went without a paycheck. And I would see stuff come through my news feed saying, hey, USA Bank is putting together what will give you a 60-day loan. Since you're not getting a paycheck, are you kidding me? You've missed one paycheck and you need a loan to keep everything afloat. That's because, again, those systems, that budget, after you identify what that monthly number is, do you have 3 months of that set aside to cover that? 3-6 months to cover that? Whether you're personal or business, do you know what your core capital cushion is and dollars that you need to have set aside? Because that's your new zero. If your bank account is if you need $3,000 a month to keep your household afloat, your main focus right now after you get off the phone is to stack you $9,000 in your savings and now make that your new zero. That's your new zero, because we can have the carpet pulled out from underneath us at any given time, whether it's your job, your business, you have a bad month, you're killing the game in the mortgage industry, and then the mortgage industry go up in flames, or whatever the case may be, right? So if you need to have that in place, so you need to prepare for that. And again, that's the second piece of that system that we talked about, is understanding the budget and then having that core capital cushion set aside. And unfortunately, a lot of us are struggling with that.
Right. And I'll just add to this, and I'm going to go to my next question, is we have a tendency to, I'm gonna call my brothers and sisters out on this. We have a tendency to always look for some sort of outside force to come, or some sort of outside issue, meaning that no, there's nobody that's coming to give you a job. There's not. There's no person that's going. Mm-hmm. There's not any sort of legislation or anything that's going to be written into law that says all of a sudden we're going to just give blacks all the jobs they need, 70,000 a year. No. That's not coming. That's not even realistic.
Mm-mm.
There's no precedent or anything to show that's ever happened or that it's going to happen. We are our own saviors.
one of the things you mentioned, Perry, and of course us living here in the Columbus area, about other pockets and other communities who actually build together. You mentioned Somalians and Jewish, and you know, even there's, you know, not so much here, but there's Hispanic areas and everything. And one of the main problems that we have and we're going to continue to have is we don't want to come together. I mean, when you look at all the other races, and there have been some outside factors. I understand that there are other races that get business loans and approved for SBA loans and everything that we don't actually get to. I do understand that. But when you look at other races and look how they've, and you just got to call a spade a spade, look how they've really just ran right past us. And I mean, just moved actually right around us. You have to kind of take some onus on us as a, when are we going to figure it out? When are we going to actually come together and say, you know what? Yeah, because that's one of the things that, you know, I can honestly say about white people. They don't care. They're like, I don't like him, but I can do business with him. And so they'll do business and do a transaction with white people, even if they don't like the guy. We got to get over this idea that I don't like him and I don't like, he moved kind of funny for me. We have to get over this idea that people, you know, I don't like him. He, you know, he does this, or he, you know, he did my girl wrong, or he likes white women, or he does. No. Put all that aside. Put that madness aside and say, you know, don't worry about the fact that he slept with your girl and then left 2 days later. That ain't the point. If you can make money with him and you can build something with him, let's build with one another. Because that's reality. I can't tell you how many people have things where they just have these agendas where they're just sitting back like, I don't like the way he did such and such. And men too, you know, we're good at it. Yeah. That's why we have, if you look in the black community, that's why we have so many, and I'm excuse me for saying this on a Sunday, so many damn churches in the black community, because rather than kind of coming together and saying we can actually build this huge church and, you know, service the community and do all these wonderful things and make money ourselves while we're serving the community, we look at it and like, Kevin, I don't like what he said about such and such. I want to be the main, I want to be the ringleader. I don't want to be right. Robin. I want to be Batman. And so we always end up kind of blazing our own trail rather than doing what other communities do and saying, why don't we come together and pool, P-O-O-L, pool our monies together and let's do something. Mm-hmm.
I gotta share this quick story, Blair, just off the strength of that.
Go ahead.
So I'm recently married. I had daughters from a previous relationship, and recently married here. So my daughters are turning 10 this year, and I actually be celebrating my 2-year anniversary here with my wife here in May. So my wife is not black. So my wife is Jewish, is part Jewish. Her father is 100% European Jewish from Brooklyn, New York. So this was a really interesting piece for me, because this is, you know, a first in my family, if you will. And I remember her dad would say some stuff to me because he knew I was a financial advisor, and he actually had an account over at a firm that I used to be with. So when I told him, like, I used to be an advisor over there, he would ask me these questions around Sunday dinner, like, hey, Perry, what you think about this? Or, hey, Perry, and I'm like, well, let me see your statement one day, and, you know, and we're talking, and I'm not saying anything to him about the statement. So I'm like, maybe think about this, or maybe make some changes here. And I remember talking to, at the time, not even my wife yet, she was my fiance, and I said, hey, babe, I'm looking at your dad's account. The advisor over there is not taking care of him at all. When an issue is, his account probably isn't large enough for the advisor over there to even care, but he needs to be making some changes in it. And she said, well, babe, you need to reach out to him and schedule a business meeting to sit down and talk to him about it. I said, I don't want to make stuff awkward. We about to get married. That's how we think in the black church. Yeah. I don't want to make things awkward. I don't want to talk about money. I don't want you mad at me. So I followed my fiance's advice, sat down with my future father-in-law and mother-in-law. And I remember I said, hey, the conversation we're about to have right now, I'm not your future son-in-law. I'm an advisor, and that's how we're going to run the conversation. So we went through the whole piece. I showed them the gaps in their plan, the things they need to be thinking about, the adjustments that they needed to make. And after we finished that up, my father-in-law, future father-in-law, looked at me and he said to me, "Well, Perry, that was great. That's more information we've ever received from the current advisor. We're going to move these, all of these accounts over here to you." But he said, "But I need you to understand this. This is just money." I said, "Okay." He said, "You're marrying my most prized possession. That's my daughter." I said, "Okay." He said, "This is money right here." He said to me, "So ultimately, when I die, this money is going to my daughter, who's my most valuable possession. So why not give it to you to manage? Because you're actually managing your future net worth." And it blew my mind. And it blew my mind in so many different ways, because it's like, us wanting to talk about money, nobody wants to talk about how much money they make. Oh, I ain't gonna let nobody know how much money. Or nobody gonna talk about what's in my portfolio. Other communities, y'all, are having this conversation. They talking like, "Hey, man, how close are you to that $1 million? Hey, man, how close are you being a debt-free?" Okay, hey, if they're having these conversations, these are the conversations that they're having. It's not taboo as people think it is. So I just had to share that with the audience as well.
Yeah, that's man. I mean, it's very smart on your father-in-law to kind of do that, because by proxy, with you marrying his daughter, you're going to be involved with her anyway. So the idea of just kind of saying, "You know what, let me, I mean, this person has my birth. Why not, allow him to kind of oversee?" Because it's a win-win. It builds trust and it builds family and everything. I mean, we got to get in the game, and that's my whole point and everything with it. So my next question I want to ask to you, Perry, is this. Mm-hmm. I talked to a number of folks who are doing well, either collectively or individually. Now, I don't know what their total portfolio or total assets are and everything. I just know they make, good money. That said, when you come together as a couple in marriage, what are some of the key things you tell the other party to look for? What are some of the, like, ooh, if they have that, you want to be aware of it and everything. What are some of the kind of the things that you should look for as it relates to their partner's solvency?
Okay. So I don't want to take love out of the marriage, because love ultimately is going to be the foundation of the marriage, right? That love and communication and whatnot. But after you find someone that you have, if you find someone that you're thinking about moving forward with in marriage, you need to actually go to a business merger acquisition dialogue. So if marriage, you're bringing two people together as one, right? So if I'm a company over here, I'm company A, and I'm looking at merging with company B, I'm going to lift up the hood. I need to know all their financials. Now, not only do I need to know all their financials, I need to know how healthy the business is. I need to know how much debt you have, cash on hand. All of these things need to be looked at, because effectively when you're marrying somebody, you're not just marrying that person. You're marrying their perspective on money. You're marrying their family's perspective on money. You're marrying their income. You're marrying their debt. You're ultimately marrying, marrying their net worth. So if they're coming to the table with bad money habits, then understanding that you're about to merge with another business that had bad money habits. So knowing what we know now about Enron and going bankrupt and how they was lying on their numbers and their tax returns and all of that, would you, if you had a company, would you go marry Enron knowing what we know now? Absolutely not. So, granted, love is definitely what makes the core of the relationship. But if you're looking at marriage, then you need to actually have that conversation and understand it's not about, "Oh, I only marry somebody who's going to make six figures." Because, again, it's cats making six figures who broke as a joke. They front with it, front with the house, front with the car. You might be better off marrying that person that's making $30,000, but they got $100,000 in the bank and $250 in the 401K. So, but you need to make sure that you're having conversations about your money philosophies. Hey, and it doesn't have to be like, "Oh, show me your bank account." It could be, "Hey, so tell me your savings philosophy. So how do you save? How do you go about saving? Hey, what are you currently invested in? Hey, you're looking to start a business," but you need to have these conversations, because when you merge those together, you're merging not only the financials, but also to the culture. And the same way, again, going back to the analogy, looking at two different businesses, does it make sense for us to merge our cultures together? Where are you good? Where I'm weak? Where am I weak? Where you are strong? What are you bringing to the table? Oh, you bringing this to the table. I'm bringing this to the table. You know what? It makes for a good merger. That's kind of be my feedback on that whole piece, bro.
And I will say this, and I want to keep
it well put.
Want to keep?
Go ahead.
Oh, I was gonna keep it over to you, Ted, but go right ahead. Go ahead.
So I do a lot of work in post integration, and most companies never actually fully realize the intended value of an acquisition or a merger because of what you're saying, because the cultures don't come together well. And if people could understand when a man and woman, when you come together, that really is a merger. But it's not just looking under the hood of the individual. You really have to look at their family and their friends.
Mm-hmm.
I had a client.
You're getting all
I had a client. He worked for a huge financial firm, and his wife had her own dental practice. Right, they were all here in New York. They had a son, and the husband, he said, "Hey, we're moving to Florida." Now, his wife had a few really good friends. They were well-educated women, professionals. I think they all were attorneys, and all of her friends made $300,000 plus a year, all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And they lived,
mm-hmm.
and her friends lived paycheck to paycheck. On $300,000, you know, $300,000-$400,000 a year. So he moved his family down to Florida. His wife was mean. She was nasty. She was angry. She just, you know, said he ruined, you know, you're ruining my life. She had to start her dental practice all over, and he was fine from his perspective. And a couple of years later, she came back up to New York. Her dental practice is growing and doing well. And she went to hang out with her female friends. And she never realized that she was getting sucked up into their life. And the guy, the husband, he saw the writing on the wall that she was going to burn through cash. And when she saw that her friends were still living paycheck to paycheck and making sufficient amount of money, she went to her husband and said, "I'm so sorry. I now understand why you moved. I'm so glad we moved, because I would still be living like that, and I could not see it. I was blind. It was a blind spot. And couldn't see it." So when we talk about mindset, that's part of it. Like those, her attorney friends were kind of like someone who won the lottery. You know, sort of a mindset of scarcity, like I just have to, you only live once, and you have to just enjoy it and do whatever, but not really thinking about the future. And maybe that was part of the reason why they were single and were going to remain single. I don't know their status now. But we started this conversation with mindset and having a mindset. And I know a lot of people think, well, I read a book, and a self-help book, but really, you know, you're looking at 20, 30, 40, 60 years of a mindset, and it's like someone who plays a sport. You can play basketball, tennis, golf, and all of those sports require a technique. And if you've been shooting a basketball incorrectly, like your elbow is wrong, and you just have this bad habit, or you play golf and the way you swing and the way your hip moves, or you swing a tennis racket, and you can't understand why your game is so bad, it's because you have this bad habit, this technique, and it's really a coach that helps you unlearn and then put practices into play to have you do it appropriately. And if you look at a guy like Tiger Woods, I don't care what people want to say about him personally, Tiger showed mastery. He changed his swing two or three times. Here's a guy who was at the top of his game and then just changed his swing. When he changed his swing, his game, his performance was not really good at all. he had to master mm-hmm. the new swing, and when he mastered it, he was right back on top. He changed the swing mm-hmm. again. Same pattern, his game dropped, but his coach helped him to master that swing. He didn't get it by reading a book on how to change your swing. He had a coach who was with him there every step of the way so that he could make sure the new practices he's putting in place. So if you have bad habits, if you have a mindset that has you in a financial position you don't want to be in, then getting someone, that's like an investment in yourself so that you can develop the appropriate mindset, and then you are consistently, someone's helping to hold you accountable to what you said was step one, know your expenses. Know what they are. And developing a new mindset. So if we take really step one before, you know, the ground zero is developing a mindset, and then simultaneously making sure you know, what's on your credit cards, what are you spending every month, what are you bringing in, is it match? What's the next thing to do? What would you say the next step? And this is just for anyone, because like these women who made $300,000 a year, they were living paycheck to paycheck. So it would sound like someone like you could support them.
So Ted, matter of fact, if we ended the call now, we would be good, because that is exactly that you just did a commercial for me. Blair, you asked earlier, so what is the ECFO? What does that stand for? Well, it initially stands for the Entrepreneur CFO, but my CFO is not Chief Financial Officer. My CFO is Coach first, Financial Advisor second, and Business Optimizer lastly. So to your point, after you sit down and really taking stock of where you currently are, the absolute best investment, and it's so crazy that you said it, Ted, because I couldn't have said it any better, the absolute best investment you can make is in yourself. So and investing in yourself and hiring a coach. So going back to what we talked about earlier, Blair, and we was like, okay, so kind of tell us your business model. My business model is a coaching model first. So I have one house and two sides to the business. The first side of the business is the personal financial planning side, which already has coaching built into it. Because to your point, if you've been shooting your jump shot wrong for 20, 30 years, you reading a book on a jump shot ain't going to fix your jump shot. So that's why we partner with our clients and really guide them through that process. And then what I found out, because so many of my clients were entrepreneurs in some way, shape, or form, either part-time, full-time, whatever the case may be, and they're having the same issues as people on the personal side, we created a 60-day program where we bring in small businesses and actually implement every system they need to be successful. All they got to do is go out and make the money. But as far as their financial systems, tax maximization, qualifying for lending, the whole nine, cash flow management, how to allocate your cash the right way, we put all of that in place for them. So going back to the question that you just had, after they've taken stock of where they currently are, what's the next step? Hire a professional. You ain't got to hire me. I may not be a good fit for you, but hire a professional who you feel comfortable communicating your story with, because it's just like going to a doctor. You need to go in, sit down with a professional and say, hey, bear everything. These are my symptoms. This is what I'm feeling. This is what I got. This is how long I've been doing it. I need your help. So at that point in time, you have to work with a financial professional. And I'll tell this to anybody. One of the biggest mistakes I made as a financial advisor when I first became a financial advisor was not hiring a financial advisor, because I need a second set of eyes to look at my situation. Had I had the 2001 Perry Jeffries, had the 2019 Perry Jeffries, I would be a multi-millionaire, I guarantee you, because I had all of the hustle, I had the assets, I was making money, but I didn't have that second set of eyes to tell me, hey, P, you need to move left, you're about to move right, you need to move left. So working with a professional, Ted, I think is the very next step.
Okay. Let's take us now.
Go ahead, Ted.
Go ahead. You going to take the call?
Well, I was going to say, the funny thing about it is that I think since we started this, what, back in October, and this will probably be the first podcast where we have not had a single caller on the line, which, you know, that I think because maybe we're talking about something that makes folks a little uncomfortable, maybe they don't want to put their information out there. So definitely understand that. So the calling number still is 323-642-1387. I mean, I'm having a great time with the conversation and learning some stuff as well. The one I want to just kind of hit on two things real quick. You had mentioned earlier, Carrie, about kind of having, you know, kind of looking at things in more of a macro fashion. So as I mentioned to you earlier, I'm a loan originator. I do loans for people, mm-hmm. and one of the first things that people want to know is what kind of rate can you get? And I'm like, well, you know, pump the brakes for a second. I'm not going to tell you any sort of rate. Mm-hmm. I need to understand where you are. Don't worry about a rate because I can put mm-hmm. in a low rate, and it could, you know, anybody that knows anything about loans will tell you I can put you in a low rate and put you and have you in a payment of $700 in a $200,000-$300,000 home. And when you look at this thing down the road, you'll be paying almost $3,000 a month. So don't mm-hmm. be fixated on rates. But my mm-hmm. more important point, what I want to say is, you know, being what we are, we're a large mortgage company. We turn down folks all the time who have 800 credit score, people who have six-figure income. I need to know mm-hmm. what's your whole situation. Because just because of the fact that you have an 800 score, you may be, and again, for anyone who knows anything about equity and everything in your home, you cannot, unless you're a veteran, you can't borrow more than 85% out of your home as far as a loan mm-hmm. to value. So if you have a home, it could be valued at $700,000. But if you owe $680,000, guess what? I can't give you a loan. I mean, mm-hmm. I can't even refinance it. I can't even do a rate term and get you a lower rate on it. So mm-hmm. that's the thing that people need to understand. And I kind of segue that and bring it on to back to people's finances. A lot of times, mm-hmm. you made this very, very good point, Perry. A lot of times people like to be like, well, I make, you know, X amount of dollars a year. You know, I make $120 a year, I make $150 or maybe more, or I make $70,000 a year. Not bad money, not mm-hmm. bad money at all.
Mm-hmm.
But if you make, mm-hmm. you know, and I put this actually in my last book, if you make $100,000 a year and your bills are $101,000, Negro, you broke.
You broke.
So, yeah, understand the person's full situation. A person mm-hmm. can be in a situation where they make $40,000, $50,000 a year, but if they have no debt, have good credit, they probably could be in a better situation than someone who's making $100,000 a year and has a 610 credit score and a mountain of debt. So look at the entire situation. Don't just look at the fact of this person makes X amount of dollars, we're going to be fine. Well, you may be driving around in a Maserati, but you broke. Who wants to do that for the next mm-hmm. 5-10 years or longer? So mm-hmm. look at the person's mm-hmm. whole situation. The other thing I will just mention to you and everything, and I'll kick it back over to you and we'll take another question, is I have a number of friends who, over the period of probably the past 5 to 10 years, have changed careers. I'm one of them. You know, as I said, I was making X amount of dollars back, you know, in the late 2000s, and because of the way that the system is, I had to switch careers. I have a number of mm-hmm. friends who were in industries, and maybe they were making big money, and the industries never came back, and they're like, huh, I got to switch careers because I can't, you know, wait for this to maybe or maybe not come back around. You know, they don't make the same mm-hmm. money. They, you know, and that's okay. A lot of folks have not really caught back up to the kind of salaries and income that they had previously, and that's perfectly okay. So I just want to tell people out there that that's fine, and that there's nothing that, you know, that nothing to be ashamed about, and just keep on pushing. So let's try to get to another caller real quick. We got 848 area code. 848, are you there?
Yes, it is. How you doing there? Blair, Teddy, this is Dwayne Santos.
What's going on? Hey. How are you, man?
I'm doing all right. I like the conversation, you know, and it's a important conversation. And you're right, that's something we don't like to talk about as far as like investing. I'm a business owner. I drive a truck. I have my own truck. and everything. I'm looking to expand, you know, to build the business. And I always tell people, well, I'm not just a truck driver. I'm a businessman because I got to book my loads, buying loads, you know. You know, more responsibility. Now, I don't have my own authority, meaning that I'm leased under a company, but they do allow me to book my own loads, find my loads and stuff. So what I wanted to know, and I guess when you said finding a financial person to help you build the business, I mean, you know, I got one truck and trailer. Next year the truck will be paid for, and then I got another year have to go with the trailer being paid for, but you know, it's also expense and everything. So if I was to hire a financial planner just with one truck, I mean, would that make sense?
Okay, great question. So this is the deal, and the deal is the and I really love this question because I think it's going to help a lot of people out here. So the word, the term financial advisor, financial planner, you know, financial registered rep, you know, whatever the case may be, these are very, very broad terms. And to answer your question directly, you don't technically need a financial planner, right? So a planner is going to be, hey, we're going to sit down, put together. Who you need is actually a business coach who understands finances. So how, when we work with our clients on the second side of our business under our Entrepreneur CFO platform, we sit down with our small business clients and really help you understand your numbers. So you're about to have a truck paid off. How do we use that additional cash flow to put that towards purchasing another truck? Those aren't technically conversations that fall under what people typically think of when they say financial planner. Typically, when they think of financial planner, financial advisor, they think they're going to try to sell them a stock or an investment or something along those lines. Who you need to sit down and speak with, and this is something that we do offer on our Entrepreneur CFO platform, but if you have even someone out in New York you sit with, you need to sit down with a business coach who understands your finances, who can help you understand on paper how to make your business, how your business can actually expand. Because if we can't make it work on paper, we can't make it work in real life. And if you go and you try to talk to somebody at Merrill Lynch about that, or, you know, somebody over at, you know, another company who's dealing with life insurance, they're not going to be able to help you with that. You need to be working with somebody who actually understands entrepreneurship and business. But yes, that is some point. So in the term of financial planner, that's not where you probably want to go.
So excellent. Excellent. Appreciate that. Dwayne, hold the line for a second. I'm going to try to get another caller in here real quick. We have area code 718. 718, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
State your name and where you're calling from, please.
I'm calling from Queens. This is Anita Kay. I enjoyed the show this evening. He's talking about what you need to do, and I'm sitting at the table doing that today. That's what I do on Sunday nights and listen to the program. A lot of times people don't take advantage of the financial things that happen, like when your employer meets your savings and contributes to it by 4% or 6%. You know, I find a lot of people say, well, I don't have any money to save. And I was like, oh, that's tax-deferred money, and your employer's matching your payment at a percentage. It's like getting extra dollars on. You won't even miss it from your paycheck. So, you know, economically, like you say, as black people, we don't speak a lot about finances. I find a lot of girls don't talk about it. And the only way I learned it is that I saw my mother with a low-income job, and by the time she got older, boy, the fortune she amassed, and that's without a financial planner that she had. And, I mean, it's pretty significant where you can go out. And as I get to the age of retirement and I want to retire, you know, managing your finances, although I made over six figures. And right now, as I get ready to retire, I'm planning to just come back to the basics. You know, no big cars, maybe turn in the leases, get rid of some of the stuff I'm not using, and see if I can live on $30,000 a year, make my dollar go. and on the same time
yeah.
maybe even get a little hustle so I can put something back into it. So, you know, I'm glad you guys
it.
Had this program. That's also really important going financially because, you know, if you're dating somebody, everybody thinks when you're a doctor or a lawyer, you got big paper. But, you know, a lot of us don't have pension plans as entrepreneurs and we have to save our
mm-hmm.
money. And nobody ever talks about that. Nobody
mm-hmm.
talks about that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Harry, I want you to, I want you to weigh in on that. We got about, we have about 5 minutes left of the show and everything. So give your give your thoughts and everything. And I'm going to ask one last question, and then we're going to end the show. And I want you to give your shout-outs to how people can reach you. But go ahead and give your feedback, please.
Absolutely. Seems like New York is representing the house tonight, so thank you so much for that and just your energy on that comment. So you're absolutely correct. There's free money on the table, just to piggyback on what you said. If your employer is matching you and they're willing to put in money on top of your money, understand that is free money. That is one of the only times you can get a 100% return on your money. If you put in $5 and they say they're going to put in $5, that's $10. You figure out how to make that happen. To your point about the entrepreneur piece, more wealth is being created in the United States at this point in time through entrepreneurship than anything else. Prior to entrepreneurship, what was a leading indicator of wealth was legacy, money being passed down from generation to generation. Well, that's not really happening in our community, which means we need to create this legacy for ourselves and for our families and other generations. And to your point, the reason your mother was able to do what she did, because she knew that budget. I bet you if I sat down with her and said, hey, how much money do you need to keep that keep the house going? She could have told you we need $125.75, and she was saving everything above and beyond that because back in the day, we knew how to save. And to your point, that's without having a financial advisor. So she'd probably be a multi-millionaire with a financial advisor just giving her some direction. So thank you for your comment. You were spot on, and I just your energy was outstanding, so I appreciate you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Anita. If you want to stay online and listen to your brother, welcome. Thank you for all your, you know, thank you for your continued listening. I want to ask one last question. Perry, if you can answer that, then I want to kind of get Ted to kind of weigh in as well. What's the average salary per person in the U.S., and then what's the average salary for, let's say, a family of four or a couple or whatever, just to kind of give some technical.
So when I pulled up my stats, it was kind of weird. I was seeing stuff around a $40,000, $50,000 range. I think those numbers are so skewed, though, Blair, and the reason I say that, I don't think that's taken into consideration what the entrepreneurs are doing. I know so many folks who maybe have a job where you had an income at the job is 40, but what they're doing in their business may be way above that through their real estate and things of that nature. So it was just hard for me to quantify. I tried to find some data on it, but really couldn't pull it. But I will say this, with so many more people in the entrepreneurship space and kind of going that direction, I think all of our numbers are going to be kind of skewed here because we've got people who have jobs and people who have the side hustles and then people who are just full on going their hustles. But I found some stuff in that 40-50 range, but I think that's completely off, me personally.
Okay, cool. Ted, go ahead and weigh in. I want you to put your thought. We got literally 2 minutes before the show ends, and then I want to get Harry to give his job.
Okay. I've got a minute. So the question, and we're really kind of out of time for it, once a person gets their number, they get their head straight, would you suggest someone look at equities, or should they look at T-bills or corporate bonds? Should people look at that? I mean, I would ask in greater detail because you have pink sheets, right?
Yeah.
Those are penny stocks. I mean, I'm probably not the best. Would you suggest that people look at those kinds of investments?
This is what I would say.
Perry, real quick. Perry, if you can answer that in literally 30 seconds less, because I want to give you a shout out. Go ahead.
Okay, cool. Yep, so I got the timer on right now. Don't invest anything until you have a financial plan. How we do financial planning, we have now, soon, and later on buckets. Now bucket is money that you need 0 to 12 months. Soon bucket is money you need 2 to 10 years. Later on bucket is money you need 10 years plus. Until you have that plan and understand which buckets you have, then we can start talking about equities, which more than likely are going to fall in a later on bucket 10 years out, 30 seconds or less.
Yeah.
So have a plan before you invest.
Awesome. Great. Perry, we got literally 30 seconds left. Give your shout-out to how people can get in contact with you, please.
Yeah. Please, you can follow us. Actually, just find us on the web at PerryJeffries.com. That's www.PerryJeffries.com, and there you can find us on all our social media. We're on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, the whole nine.
Okay, excellent. Perry, thank you for being on the show. Thanks to Ted as well, and thanks for the callers. Catch us next week, and we'll be back. Love you all.
Man, appreciate your brother. Thank you so much for this. Yep.
No.
It'll be easy. Bye.
Thank you, brother.
All right. Bye. Bye.
Nice.